Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, I just want to say very quick, the RPG Goblin has a Patreon. If you love the show and really enjoy what we're doing here with introducing people to new TTRPGs outside of D&D, then please consider supporting the Patreon. I started this podcast after I got really burnt out making dice, which was my full-time job before, and I have truly found something that makes me so excited and passionate and that I love doing and that would be my absolute dream job, and it is running this podcast. It is talking about TTRPGs and making it more accessible for people. I'm doing this all solo, and to be able to keep doing that and not have to split my time between a job and being able to continue doing more TTRPG content, that is what the Patreon is for, so that we can continue doing this fully, make this a dream job, and yeah, make TTRPGs more accessible for people and all kinds of fun TTRPG content. So if you enjoy the show, please check out the Patreon, either in the description of this episode or at patreon.com/therpggoblin. And along with supporting the show, you also get to be a part of the RPG Goblin Discord server and monthly TTRPG parties with giveaways, guests, and talk about TTRPGs all we want and be able to ask me questions directly. So yeah, thank you so much. Any little bit of support means the absolute world to me. And yeah, let's get to the episode. Are you a game master that loves to run TTRPG games and wish to make a job out of it? Well, that's what we're talking about in today's episode of the RPG Goblin, as I bring on a guest who is actually a professional GM, and we talk about their experiences so far of becoming a professional game master, how they run their games, and all of the above. If you've ever been curious about what a professional GM is, or even how to become one, I highly recommend listening to this episode. So, let's get into it. We are going to be talking about being a professional DM, which is something I've been super curious about learning and just like hearing stories and like how a person does it. So I brought on a guest, Odin. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So I am Odin. I am a professional dungeon master and also just game master in general because I run other systems. And also a professional bookmaker and small press publisher. Yes. So I run Susurit Press, which is what my handle is on all social media. So that's SUSURRATE _ press, PRESS. And I make notebooks, I bind fan fiction, and also just like other people's writing that they want published, but just like for themselves. And publish at least one zine a month, and I'm starting to work with other artists to get more stuff out in the world. So that's kind of like an overview of who I am.
Yes, yes, amazing. And I mean, I have a few, there are some small books I've gotten from you, but I love them very much. They're very adorable and amazing. So I 100% recommend checking them out.
Thank you. Yeah.
But yeah, so today we are talking about being a professional game master. And I think the best question to start out with is, what all goes into starting a game as a professional dungeon master? With finding a group, organizing the game, stuff like that. What, at least to start the game itself, what work do you have to put into it at first?
So there are a couple things. I mainly run one-shot adventures for people because a lot of people don't have the time to commit to a full campaign but want to play like once a month, and they'll just come in and do a session, and either they'll bring their own characters or I'll bring characters for them. But basically, I just have a huge backlog of one-shots that I have written that I can bring out at any time. So having a big, you don't have to have a huge backlog to start. I like to have that just because sometimes I have repeat players come to different sessions, and so just having something that like you can pull out whenever that hopefully no one has played before is a great way to start. Also, like running games for your friends is a great way to sort of get into the vibe of DMing, especially if you like haven't done it before. But the next biggest thing is figuring out where to play and where to like gain your audience. So
yes.
there are like two main sort of pathways that you can go on for something like that, and that is running games online, which there are a couple websites out there that offer like online DMing that you can like offer your services and say, you know, I'm going to run this game on this date at this time using these platforms, mm-hmm. and then people can sign up for them. Or finding a place locally where you can like host public games, which is how I started out. So I'm very lucky in that my town has a little board game cafe, and
that is adorable. Wanted
these. Yeah, it's amazing. And it's like, it's so nice and a wonderful, wonderful community space. And they host a lot of public events. And so they mm-hmm. wanted to have me start running Dungeons and Dragons there. They had online signups so that people could sign up in advance. And I just started running games, and I would do like 3 a month or something like that. I could do as many as I wanted, really, which is great. And so I started establishing sort of a repertoire there. People who came to my games often would come to my next game. And from that, I started getting private games. So people who have played in these public sessions, who have other friends who want to play, but don't want to go to public settings. So then I have another location that I like offer private games at that is like still in a public space, but that is like quiet and controlled. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you just go from there. And then other businesses started hearing that I was doing this and started asking me to run games at their shops. And it all have evolved from there.
That is honestly amazing. If you don't mind me asking, when did you start running these games? What year?
I've been running games professionally for about a year now.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've been DMing for close to 6 or 7 years, I would say.
Oh, wow.
And I've been playing for like 10 to 13 years. I can't remember when I started exactly, but somewhere in that range.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh my gosh. As someone who's definitely a newbie compared to that. But that is honestly... So that is amazing, because my first game that I ever played of D&D was actually at a public, it was a public game at a game shop, and I believe it was the owner was running the games, and just like having that starting off point of just someone there to run a public game, especially if you're doing it in a one-shot format, that is a fantastic way to introduce people to D&D and like role-playing games like that. And I honestly wish, because the game shop that I went to actually started a campaign publicly, and that was a little bit of chaos, but like just doing one shots is absolutely perfect. And that is so cool that, I mean, you started running for this one, for the cafe, and then like other shops started to come to you, and then you got private games. Like, that is a dream for a DM, honestly. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And also one of the really, really nice things about running games professionally is that people are paying to be there. And so they are really invested in the game.
Committed.
Yes, exactly. Whereas like sometimes when you're playing with friends, it's an off week for someone and maybe they don't want to play as much or like they aren't as into it. But people who are paying for their games, they're like, they are there to play, and mm-hmm. they really get into it. And we always have so much fun. Like, even when I go into a session and I'm not feeling my best, like my players always just sort of bring me back to my center and make it such a wonderful time.
Oh man, that is so sweet. But I've seen that before as well, through like Facebook groups online talking about like being in like a professional not professional D&D game, but like being in a game by a professional DM. It's like more commitment, because mm-hmm. you're paying for this person's time, and especially DMs who run full campaigns, like paid DMs mm-hmm. who run full campaigns. That's insane. And so if you're paying for it, you're definitely going to be taking full advantage of the time you're playing.
Hey everyone, it is time for the midpoint break in today's episode. I really hope that you are enjoying it so far. If you are, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin wherever you listen to your podcast, so that you can be reminded whenever there is a new episode, which comes out weekly. And if you haven't yet, please make sure to give the RPG Goblin a rating wherever you listen to it. It really helps other people know that you're enjoying the show, and it just makes me really happy to see.
if you want more behind the scenes and knowing what's happening with the RPG Goblin outside of the podcast, please make sure to follow me on social media as well. I mainly use Threads and TikTok at the moment, which you can find me on both at the RPG Goblin. I like to spotlight a lot of games in much shorter videos there. I also like to show off what I'm reading, and I like to talk about TTRPGs there, so join the conversation. Also, just as a reminder, the RPG Goblin does have a Patreon. And if you would like to see this show continue and you like what we're doing here with introducing people to new TTRPGs, please make sure to go support it if you can. It's only $5 a month for the lowest tier, and that will get you access to the RPG Goblin Discord server along with monthly TTRPG parties where we will have guests, giveaways, and generally awesome TTRPG conversations since you can ask questions and, yeah, just have a really good time. The first party is going to be at the end of February, and I'm really, really excited for it. So if you want to know what that party is going to have in it, please make sure to follow the RPG Goblin on social media. Now, I appreciate all the support towards this show, whether it be through listening, following along with the podcast, or going and becoming a patron. It all means the world to me, and I want to thank you so, so very much.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like, the time commitment is always varied. It kind of depends on the day. Like, I have different one-shots that are different length. And and also, because I write all of my adventures, they all take place in the same world that I've been building. And so even though they're not technically knit together like a traditional campaign, they do all sort of have components from each other. So they have, like, this really nice cohesion that goes together.
Do they, have you found that, like, have, like, they affected each other, like, even with story elements?
Sometimes, and that's something that I've actually been working on, where when someone plays through an adventure, it sometimes affects the next playthrough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's this fantasy frat party that I host, and depending on how the outcome of that goes, the next time someone plays it, some things might be different based on what's going on.
That's so fun.
Sort of in the world, yeah.
I've seen one DM on TikTok talk about doing that, and I was like, once you said that, like, they kind of cookie cutter in together, or not, but like they kind of meld together.
Puzzle piece,
yeah. I'm like, oh wait, I need to ask, like, have they affected each other? Because I think this person runs longer games, and like their parties have different parties have actually, like, worked together in sessions before because they're, like, facing the same thing, which is absolutely insane. But
yeah, it's so cool.
A question that I do have, as someone who would GM professionally, do you have any sort of, because you could definitely play with a lot of different people being online or in person, do you have any sort do you do any sort of vetting or have, like, rules set for your players on, like, how they should be at the table? Do you vet players to make sure that, like, they would actually be enjoyable to play with? Do you have any kind of system like that?
So, kind of. When I am running private games for people who I haven't met before, I always do a session zero before the actual game. And that gives me the space to, like, say, oh, I'm uncomfortable in this situation. I actually don't feel comfortable running a game for you. That has never happened, thankfully. But yes, it gives me the space to just, like, make sure that I am safe going into this, especially, like, as a young queer person, it's always really important for me to, like, make sure that safety is the priority at the table, both for my players and for me.
Absolutely.
And with that, at the session zero, we are also able to establish, like, boundaries that the players have. We establish all of the safety mechanisms that we're going to be using. Like, I always use X cards. I always use veils and lines, or lines and veils, rather. And just making sure that, like, everything is accounted for before getting into play, because it gives everyone the opportunity to become as vulnerable as they would like to be in the game space. And that while is... most of my adventures are, like, comedy sort of funny adventures, it still has the space to make hard decisions and things like that.
Absolutely. And those are really good practices. Even if you're not a professional DM, as a DM in general, those are great practices to have, is especially session zeros, talk about expectations, kind of talk through with the group, make sure everyone's on the same page, if you're playing with new people, vet the players you're playing with, because there's plenty of horror stories online and in person of bad D&D games. And those are fantastic practices to do as a DM, especially I haven't personally done the X card or the lines and veil system, safety systems yet, but that's something that I'm actually thinking of doing in future games as someone who's been DMing, because sometimes uncomfortable topics that someone didn't mention before come up, and that's a safe way for them to be like, hey, hold on. We need to like stop this and discuss. So that is fantastic that you do that. That is amazing. Those are very good.
Thank you.
Very good practices.
And I definitely recommend that to everyone. Anyone who's running a game, even if you're a player, if your DM doesn't do these things, bring it up. It's so important.
Absolutely. Especially even with groups that you've played with before, it's still good to be able to have a session zero, have those boundaries and safety stuff put up first, because you never know what happens. Absolutely. My next question is, so you said that you have like these backlog of written adventures that you have done. I'm assuming in public games, at least, you kind of pick what you're running and people would come and play. For private games, do you give them like choices on what they can play? Do you give them options? How does with a private game work?
Yeah, so at private games, it tends to run in a similar way to public games, except for we've got an established repertoire going on. And so usually I'll give them a couple options, or they can tell me what they're interested in playing, and then I bring out the adventure that is like most applicable to their interests.
Awesome. Have you ever written a adventure for a private game before, or do you just do everything that you have pre-written?
I actually have written an adventure for a private game. I have a group who came to one of my public games and really wanted to keep playing in that adventure, but I hadn't written a second part to that adventure. They just liked it so much, they wanted to keep playing with their characters, and so I wrote a part two basically to that first adventure that they got to like continue on with what they were doing.
Oh, that's so cute.
And an adventure from there. Yeah.
Oh, if you don't mind, what kind of adventure was it?
It was a pirate high seas skirmish.
Oh, man. I'm gonna
and it turned into a games. Monster. It was great. Yeah, there were sirens. There was I forget what the name of the big bad was. It was this like super wacky guy. I don't know. It was it was a big, big evil sludge demon, basically, that also was like an alligator that was poisoning an island.
Naturally. I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you do a lot of homebrew in the games that you write?
Yeah, I would say so. I definitely have a lot of stuff that I bring in, and I love to let players do what they want to do. And so basically my go-to rule is that if you want to do something, tell me what you want to do, and I will tell you the rules that we have to use to get to that point.
Yeah.
A lot of like homebrew items come up during games where like someone will say like, I want to combine these things to make this thing. And if they roll well enough, I figure out a way to mesh things together.
That is so fun.
But Yeah, it's mostly, you know, we're playing with 5e rules, and we kind of just go from there.
Yes, excuse me. So another question I have, I mean, kind of goes into the, you know, being the players being able to do what they want to do, or at least having opportunities to do what they want to do. Do you have any specific rules and regulations on, well, I shouldn't say regulations, but do you have any specific rules or limitations on like books and classes and subclasses that you allow?
Most of what I am like I'm pretty open to anything as long as there's a rule set for it. And if there isn't a rule set for it, I have even worked with people to like build out a character sheet. Like we've taken, I remember there was a class that someone wanted to play that didn't have an adaptation for 5e. And so we went back to like 4e and 3.5 and looked at all of the stats that went with it there. Or no, it was a race. It was a race. It was a moose guy.
Ooh,
fun. And so we figured out how to adapt all of those stats into 5e and went from there.
That's super cool. That's awesome that you can be adaptable like that. Because I know that there is a lot of people who like to play custom races or things that they see that are homebrew that they want to like bring into a game. So that's awesome that you allow that flexibility.
Yeah, I definitely try to keep as few limitations on things as possible because I want people to have a good time and I want people to be able to play what they want to play. And so whatever it takes to get to that is what we do.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Honestly, it sounds... I've only been DMing for a short while and it is so much fun. And to run games like that for people, especially like public games, don't always mean you're introducing someone new to D&D. But it can. And that's such a special experience to play D&D for the first time. And especially in like a public game. And if everyone's having fun, that is so, so cool. I can't even get over it. It's so awesome.
It's wonderful. And I run a lot of like intro sessions where people who've never played before all come together and we go over the basic rules, and the whole process of the session is that basically we're building a character together that they then get to play like mini session at the end with.
I wish I had that when I first started playing D&D. That is perfect. When I first started playing, I like came in on one shot and I was handed a sheet and like told like these are the things that you can do, and I was so confused. I've never really heard of D&D before. I've never played it before. I have never looked at a PHB before. And so they gave me the sheet and we just started playing, and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then like we transitioned into a campaign from there, and someone luckily was able to help me and my brother build our characters for the first time. But even then it was just like kind of step by step, like, oh, here's like class, race, all of this, and picking things and not really knowing the mechanics or what they do. And then we get like put in the game and it's like, okay, I even more don't know what to do. So having an intro session where you kind of go through building a character, explaining what things do, super important, super important. Absolutely. And I wonder, do you encourage role play with new players?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a role playing game, and I think that people shouldn't feel pressured to role play if they don't want to, because that's just not what everyone is there for. But I definitely try to give as much room for that as I possibly can, so that people who do want that can dive into it a little bit more. And with one shots, you know, you don't get a whole lot of character development, but I love to talk about, like, do character intros at the very beginning of the game and do, like, some talking in character, just so that everyone gets a chance to establish who they are and what they want to be.
That's perfect. Just killing me right now because, like if I was introduced to D&D in this way, it would be so different.
Yeah.
Because that was one actually big hurdle that I had when I started playing. And I don't know about other people, but when I started playing D&D, role play was never something that was really talked about. It was more so kind of playing through this story. And we just kind of played through it. There wasn't big opportunities for role play. And when there was, it was kind of hard to fit it in, especially with... the public games that I used to play would sometimes get up to like 10 people, which is a crazy amount of people to play D&D with, at least personally.
That is. Yeah.
But it's really hard to get introduced that way. A big hurdle that I've had to go through, and I've been slowly getting better at it, is role play, getting comfortable with role playing, getting comfortable with almost like, and being a DM has actually helped me with this, playing as a character, doing like voices, which you don't have to do voices when you're role playing, but it's kind of fun to get into it and feel more comfortable with it, especially since I was so outside my comfort zone for a very long time. And like,
yeah,
if I was playing a game where someone encouraged the role play, and like the games that you are describing that you're running sound so beginner friendly to me, and it makes me so happy to hear.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely prioritize like accessibility in my games and in all senses of the word as much as I can, so that anyone can come in and feel comfortable playing. All of my games are safe space, and just, yeah, it's always my number one priority.
That is fantastic. Just clapping for you. Like, oh my God.
Thank you.
Oh my God. So, I'm curious. I've seen things before where, so have you, you've said you've run all these games in person. Have you run many games online?
I haven't run a whole lot of games online yet. I just found a good website that I feel like comfortable using to run games. But due to some mental health issues, I like haven't been able to prioritize doing online games just because they take so much more energy for me.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Staring at a screen for at least for me, 4 or 5 hours, very exhausting.
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, what is the website? The program, I
should say. It's called Start Playing.
I think I've seen that before.
Or Duck Games.
I don't mind my
keyboard. Yeah.
I am looking at that now because I'm very curious. I personally run the one game that I play currently online, I run completely on Roll20.
Okay, yep.
Which is just the one that I heard about and I use, and I'm like, okay, this works perfectly for what I want to do. But
yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I don't run games on Start Playing. You can book games on Start Playing.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. That's what I at least thought that it was mm-hmm. a finding like groups and things like that. And that's why I looked it up to see like, oh, you can actually run games on here.
Yeah, no. I usually use Roll20 and what's the other one?
Is there one called like Forge?
I don't know. It's
I think it's like it? Yeah, I think there's one that's like called Forge or The Forge, I think, that I've heard about. I know there's another one that came out recently that's like, I don't know, it's like Roll something. I don't quite remember. Wait, hold on. Play Roll. Is that
maybe Play Roll? Interesting. I haven't heard of that one, but that's awesome.
Yeah, it's actually very, as someone who, since COVID started, I didn't play D&D for a very long time. And then mm-hmm. I ended up moving from Ohio to Florida. And luckily, I still had, my siblings and my one good friend, we just started talking again. And we're like, oh, we should really play D&D because we used to play D&D back in Ohio. And so we got like an mm-hmm. online game going. And it's really cool to actually see like more platforms for like people to start playing these games on, especially with like character sheets or virtual tabletops.
Yeah. Yeah. D&D Beyond is the one that I was thinking
gotcha.
Of. But yeah, like Talespire is amazing. And that's just been growing. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it is an incredible tabletop simulator, kind of.
Talespire,
yeah. You can build these incredible environments, and you can Ooh. Build your minis in there. It's an incredible...
I'm finding so many things.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at all these. Oh, I'm so excited. That's amazing. Yeah, it's, again, just, it's so... Because, obviously with, pandemic stuff happening, a lot of things have gone online. Especially mm-hmm. with games. And I feel like the D&D community kind of like exploded once like the pandemic started. Because I mean, like as myself, I am a dice maker, and I started selling my dice like right, like literally the like a few days after like the first like COVID shutdowns happened. And I know that after that, just from like even reactions with dice and seeing people, you know, talk about D&D and all of that, like it was a huge jump. It was absolutely insane. And so it's really cool seeing all these things come out for it. And it's obviously very much still thriving, the community, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm also curious. So you've said that you have run quite a few, I mean, a lot, I should say, not quite a few, but a lot of D&D games. As a professional DM, have you run any other game systems yet as introductions or stuff like that?
As a pro DM, no. I've run a few systems in home games and things like that, but I've only professionally run Dungeons & Dragons.
Gotcha.
I have written an adventure for Monster of the Week that is published and available. But I haven't run that professionally yet.
Do you find that it's just because D&D is the most popular and most accessible that that's really what you've run as a professional DM?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Completely understandable. Honestly, it makes me like, I mean, like, D&D is a fun one to get started with, but at the same time, it's like there's so many of these other systems that look amazing to play, but a lot of people definitely have the mindset of only D&D.
Yeah.
And I'm so hoping that you would like say that you have run some, because that would be super cool.
I know. I'm working on a big project right now where I am writing a guidebook to a city that is in my world.
Ooh, yes.
And I'm hoping to write some like accompanying adventures for that. And my intention with that is to write adventures that are applicable to both D&D 5e and to the Blades in the Dark system. And so, you know, I'm hoping that I'll be able to maybe start running intro games of that system sometime soon.
That would be really cool, especially with, I know Blades in the Dark, it's been very recent, even before like the Adventure Zone has actually started their Blades in the Dark game. But I've been seeing like it come up a bit more than like the Adventure Zone started playing it. And then I've been seeing it more and more. And what's funny enough is the day before that episode, like the setup episode came out, I actually like brought down my Blades in the Dark book, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to read this. And then my brother texted me. He's like, oh my God, they're starting Blades in the Dark. Do you know this? And I'm like, I literally like just grabbed the book to read it. But
that's amazing.
It is honestly a really cool system. And this might be silly, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but the countdown clocks in Blades in the Dark is one of my favorite things. I don't know why. It's just like such a simple mechanic that has so much use. And I just want to even use countdown clocks in my other games so bad, because they just they sound just so fun to use.
I think they're great.
Just makes my little DM heart happy. Oh my God. I don't know. This has been amazing so far, because again, I've never heard a lot of people talk about being a professional DM yet. So this has definitely been very interesting, especially with the in-person aspect more than the online aspect, because I think a lot of people have been doing online versus in-person. So that's even been really awesome to hear, is just the experience of being in person.
I've been so lucky to be able to run games in person more than online.
One thing that I'm definitely curious about as well, because as a professional DM, do you think that, especially if you're running a private game, and you only do the one shots, but if you're running a private game, have there ever been players that have come at you with like expectations of maps or minis and stuff like that?
No one has ever come with expectations of that. I sometimes bring minis to games. I do a lot of theater of the mind just because I think there's so much room for exploration in that.
Absolutely.
But then I also do just very simple battle maps that I bring.
Like a dry erase yes, square exactly. one. Yeah, absolutely. I only ask this because I saw like maybe a month ago I know I keep referencing Facebook posts because this is mostly what I've like seen with professional DMs, is stuff on Facebook. But someone was asking if they would play in a game that was run by a professional DM that was on Roll20. And a lot of the comments were saying they wouldn't play in that game because they would expect the DM to be like using the Forge, which is one of like the kind of tabletop simulation programs you can use and stuff like that, and expect like, you know, tokens and things like that for the games, all of that. And that was kind of crazy to read, especially, I mean, as a DM, as a professional DM, you're probably running, at least for like one shots, I can see, like, I couldn't see why you wouldn't just go on Roll20 or a simple game. For campaigns, I guess I can see a little bit more that you could want a different program, but I don't know. It's just very interesting to read that there were people that are like, I would not, and I have no experience with playing on the Forge, so maybe it's completely different and I'm just missing out on something. But it was super interesting to read that people are like, I would not pay for a game if it was run on anything but this program.
Yeah, that's wild to me. I've never seen that.
Yeah, and like that's why I was curious to ask you about like kind of expectations as a professional DM, because I'm like, is there like some crazy expectations people have, or like what's going on? Because again, not a lot of experience, but I'm learning a lot.
Yeah,
maybe I'll find someone who's done a lot of games online, because I would love to know if there have been expectations like that and how you would deal with that. And obviously you probably wouldn't play with that group, but it's super interesting.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to just have good people who aren't, you know, pressing for anything more than what I'm offering.
Mm-hmm. So for your, you don't have to go too much into detail, but for your for the private games that you run, those are paid?
Yep.
And then the public ones that you've done in the like game shops and stuff like that, I assume they are free to the public, but do the game shops pay you?
They actually are usually ticketed events.
I see. That's actually really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So my public games are still ticketed. And that's how I get paid. Usually I share some of the ticket fees with the shop, but yeah,
that's actually,
they're usually ticketed events.
That's actually really cool, because again, I've played in public games and sometimes there can be a lot of people, and through doing it through like a ticketed event can definitely reduce the amount of people and get the serious players in. So that's actually a really good way to do it. What has the most amount of players been that you've DM'd for in one of these public games?
I think eight.
Eight. Oh my God.
I think I had eight people at the table once.
That's insane. How was that?
It was intense. We had to add another table to my table lineup because there weren't enough chairs initially. But that was a wild game. But we had a lot of fun and it went well. So it was definitely a test in patience for everyone. Just because, you know, eight rounds of player combat gets really intense. I mean, any number of rounds of combat is always intense, but
yeah, eight rounds on top of really monsters is crazy. Oh my Lord. Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I could never imagine running for eight people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what is the least amount of people that you will run for?
It depends. I would run a solo session for someone if they wanted to. It's just I would have to adjust the price to account for my time. So it's kind of like how much people are interested in paying for something like that.
And so would it be more for a solo session then?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to like readjust like encounters and things like that.
Yeah, and I would probably, if I were running a solo session, it would probably be pretty tailored to the person I was running it for.
Absolutely.
And so it takes into account writing time, you know, practicing, bringing things together, as well as the actual time of running the game.
Yeah, that is completely fair. And so if you're willing to do a one-on-one game with the adjusted price, what has been the minimum? So we went to the extreme of 8 people. What has been the minimum that you have run for?
I've actually run games for 2 people before. But my like average is 3 or 4 usually.
Those are usually pretty good size groups.
Yeah.
I personally
I'm so sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, I think my average is probably closer to 5 because I get a lot of 6-player games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's common. It is quite common to have 3 or 4 people at a table.
Yeah, I think, again, that is like a good comfortable level where it's like you can kind of give enough spotlight for each person and have enough people at the same time. And luckily, that's a lot of what things are balanced towards is at least like, I think usually like 4 players, 4 characters, I guess. That's the one thing that kind of stresses me out about playing D&D sometimes is balancing the encounters.
Yeah, and I do a lot of fudging of things as I go.
Especially just, if it makes it more fun. Like
exactly. It's all about having fun.
Absolutely. And I think like that's you are all sitting down to play a nerdy tabletop role-playing game. Like everyone should just have fun. And people have fun in different ways, getting into mechanics, getting more into role-play. People, I know there are definitely people who their fun is playing by the rules, almost like to the T, and you know what, good for everyone for the different play styles, because if you find the way that you like to play, find your group and the DM that likes to play that way and just go for it. And that actually brings up a good question that I have. There are definitely a lot of play styles with players, and you said that all your games have been very good with run. All the games that you have run have been very good. Have you ever had any, I shouldn't say issues, but has there ever been like, not tension, but like, has there ever been anything that's like come up at the table with like different play styles mixing?
Yeah, I've definitely had players clash before where one person is in a silly, goofy mood and the other person wants to be like seriously figuring out the answer to this puzzle or figuring out how to beat this this boss fight without everyone dying. And that usually just takes a little bit of mediation, a little bit of like gentle direction from me. But I've been pretty lucky to have, you know, responsible people who are kind and communicative overall.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very good, because that even at my own personal table, I've had a few issues come up like that where it's I have one player who is very serious, and then a joke thing happened in game, and he got super like uncomfortable with it, and we just kind of had to like he was like, "I just like to play seriously," and I'm like, "Okay, I understand that." And this is the entire game has been serious. The session has been serious. It was a little bit of a joke character for a paladin steed. And this is in our like long-term homebrew game. So it was just a little bit of a joke for a paladin steed. And said, this is what the character wanted, and it's not going to come up super often, especially if you're uncomfortable with it. It's not going to come up super often. And it was more, it wasn't as much as he was uncomfortable, as much as he just wanted to keep it all serious. And so I'm like, it won't come up very often. It'll just be like towards this character. All your things can be completely fine. And we play more, and it turns out he actually loves the steed now that he has actually mm-hmm. played with it. So sometimes it can just be someone's uncomfortable with something at the moment just because it's new. But it is good to talk through it. And I did feel bad because I'm like, I don't want him to not have fun and be uncomfortable during the game. And so we just kind of, we made a compromise at that moment, and we kind of played towards that until later. He's like, I actually don't mind this as much. And he proceeded to come in more. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's fun dealing with different play styles. And that's one thing that would make at least me nervous as a professional DM is dealing with different play styles, because I mean, with paid events, paid games, I think it would be better because people would be more respectful of other people and their time and what they want to do at the table. So that's good.
Yeah, and you do have to be kind of prepared for anything, mm-hmm. but I've been very lucky to have very kind players at my table.
Shout out to the kind players out there.
Shout out to the kind players.
I'm curious, just because it's always fun to talk about. Do you mind talking about a few of the different kind of one-shots that you do? And this can even, like, if anyone who's listening, if you're interested in playing games like this, maybe reach out to Odin.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, if you would like to talk about a few of, like, the one-shot games that you have, like, prepared and ready, go for it, because I'd love to hear about them.
Yeah. My favorite game that I run is my fantasy frat party. It's just so much fun.
Sounds so chaotic.
It is. But basically, you are invited to this frat party that happens once a year. It's like a festival, mm-hmm. and you have to figure out what's going on, and you save the muse of tragedy, basically, from some evil people. What else do I run? I run a, like, diner special.
Oh my god, yes.
Where everyone is transported to this pocket dimension, and you have to basically figure out how to get home. Mm-hmm. While getting through the diner.
Love that so much.
I have a Strega. I have a Strega Nona inspired one, which is a children's book about the witch who has this cauldron that makes infinite pasta. And so there's an adventure where you have to retrieve the pot.
I feel like a garlic bread cleric would really fit in that game.
Oh my god. Yes, absolutely. How amazing.
Oh my god, we love garlic bread clerics in this house.
yes, you do. You gotta.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing. And then just I like also a run pasta. Into cauldron, sorry.
Pasta themed. Yeah, I've run that one a couple times, and it's always been so fun. But yeah, those are a few of the sort of brief synopses.
Those sound so freaking cute.
Again, most of my I think they're great. Games run from, you know, two to four hours usually for a one shot. So it's definitely still palatable, because a lot of people, especially new players, get tired a little bit earlier on. So it just makes sure that everyone is having the best time that they can.
Absolutely. And that is a good point as well. As a first time player, especially if you don't know how long you're going to be there, like, it can definitely be a lot. And one shots are definitely very manageable. One thing that's very important about one shots, and I'm sure that you've gotten very good at this, especially with running the same ones several times, is mm-hmm. a good bit of streamlining, being able to kind of keep on track through the thing, but also let there still be fun. But you have to have kind of that good mix of both, because if people are just kind of going off and doing their own things, you can't finish the one shot, and then you don't finish the game, and then it's like, oh, this is so upsetting. So have you ever had a one shot go over the limit, over like the time limit where you couldn't finish it?
No, I think that usually I've been able to keep things pretty concise. I've had games go a little bit longer than I wanted them to go, just because of like sometimes players get distracted and I'm like, you know, I'm getting tired by the end of it a little bit, but usually we're pretty good and pretty on it.
Job. Because I know that a lot of times I've played a few one shots where the one, I think we did it end up going into two parts? I don't remember. I think it was two parts. It was either one part and we planned to do a second part and we never did, or it was two parts and I just don't remember the second part. But it was supposed to get all this done and then finish it. And then we like ended about three quarters of the way through. So it was very unfortunate. And then another one that my brother ran, it was like this pre-made one shot that he got, and he was running it for a public game, and a bunch of new people came and we did not do anything that entire game.
Oh man.
Story did not happen. Like basically nothing happened. It was very interesting. And I don't even remember what we did, honestly. Like, it was all kind of a blur because there's just new people who were messing around. And then it's like he was trying to stay on track, but at the same time, he's only run one shot before that. And that was the one that went over. And so he didn't know what to do, and no one like knew what to do. And it was like, it was interesting. So good on you for being able to keep like on track, because again, it's a good balance of being able to let your players do what they want, but also sticking to the story, because it's the one thing with long campaigns that's nice. You can have a little bit, you can have more wiggle room where people can go off and do different things before they do this one important thing, whatever. But with one shots, it's very important to go through the whole thing.
Yeah,
go through the whole thing. So yes, I'm just again impressed, because as also a DM who has recently been DMing literally this year, I don't think I would be able to do a full one shot in one session. Because I'm still getting used to being able to streamline and keep people on track. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and also, you know, I write my adventures, so I'm able to sort of tailor them very specifically for, like, the time that I want to take for it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that helps a lot, too, because I know now quite well, like, how much time it's going to take to get through an adventure.
And again, that's the beauty of running them several times, is you kind of get it down. you get a system down. Yeah,
exactly.
Have you ever run any pre-made adventures before? Not even for one shots, but even in home games.
Yeah, I have. I started running Strahd for one of my home games. We didn't get terribly far into that because it was I had a lot going on, and then one of our players moved, and it was just scheduling was not on our side.
The curse is
And then it's true, the curse of scheduling is real. I have run a little bit of Wild Beyond the Witchlight, but I'm playing in that now, actually. And I've run a couple Candlekeep mysteries for home games.
Are those good? I'm very curious.
I think they're fun.
Fun? Awesome.
Yeah, I love books. So that definitely plays into it.
I mean, I've got a lot of D&D books. I've barely read through most of them. But that one I've been very tempted to get, especially since they seem like, are they more so mini adventures or one shots, in your opinion?
I think they're like one shots.
I've been tempted.
The whole thing is an adventure also, which is fun.
Oh yeah.
It all knits together.
Because didn't they do that kind of similarly with Saltmarsh as well, where they kind of, like, they're available to be separate adventures, but they also do kind of knit together into a story, I believe is what they did with Saltmarsh as well. A Ghost of Saltmarsh.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's an interesting way to do it. And I do wonder how they do flow together, but I've been tempted to get the Candlekeep, thank you. the Candlekeep book, just to read through it. Also, sorry, I got distracted. There is a frog out on my lanai, and he just jumped on the ground.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we've got a lot of frogs here. It's the joy of living in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. This is very enlightening because I'm planning on running a game for a first-time player soon. I've been very nervous because I've only ever DM'd for my siblings and my friend, and I am not sure what to run. Because I'm not, I've been debating either between a one-shot or a mini-adventure, because I'm not sure how much they'll enjoy it, so I'm trying to aim for a one-shot, but I'm looking through, like, all these one-shots that I have, and I'm like, I don't know which of these would be fun, and I'm, like, freaking out, and so this is, like, kind of nice to hear you talk about running these public games and, like, streamlining the one-shots and all that, even though, like, probably my abilities are not up to that yet. It just makes me feel better.
Yeah, totally. And, like, you know, anyone can do it. And you've been running games already, so you have a feel for how it works. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's just be confident.
Yes. I feel confident about the person having fun because I already kind of got a nice little group together for it. And I think it'll be very fun for them. And they seem to be really excited to play. And I actually made them some dice and sent them to them. So it's like, here's some dice for you to play. It was a trade, but I mean, I even sent them extra dice. I'm like, just take, you can't have one set of dice. So like they got like four sets. Cause I'm like, just take them.
Good.
I have extras. So I'm very excited to play with them. Do you have any advice for what is a good, easily consumable adventure for a first-time player?
I guess, how do you mean? Do you mean of the pre-written adventures or in general, like what makes up a good consumable campaign?
In general, as you have definitely written a whole lot of one-shots, I'm very curious from your experience, what has been the kind of the best consumable, like best consumable adventures for first time players?
Definitely things that have like humor to them. Mm-hmm. You want kind of, I think that humor goes a really, really long way in making sure that people are having fun, keeping it light so that people don't feel like it has to be this intense, like battle just driven, like dungeon crawling adventure. So definitely having as much humor as you can tie into it does a lot. And from there, I would say just like have something that you are excited about running, because if you're excited about it, other people will be too.
Very true.
And it definitely, yeah, it's definitely like really clear when the DM is having fun, and that just makes the whole experience so much more, you know?
Amazing advice. Thank you. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I mean, that is a big part, is buy-in from the DM and the players. Like if everyone's having fun, you are going to have a fantastic time. And that's great advice to just run a game that you want to play. And
yes,
from reading through a lot of these other like TTRPG books and stuff, one of my favorite things is talking about kind of finding a group and approaching starting the game, where it's like, you know, go over these things, go over like these safety things, go over what kind of game you want to play, go like even with creating characters, go over creating your characters together and like have a group dynamic, like put together group dynamic, because I think that is one of the most fun things to do, is start a game where you already have a dynamic with another person. Mm-hmm. And I think as a first time player, that could also help with role play. If you have a character connection with someone else, I feel like that can help you actually be more comfortable with, like, I can talk to this person. Like mm-hmm. I have something that I can talk to this person about, and like I have a connection there, and I feel like that can make you feel more comfortable with the idea of roleplay, because roleplay can be tough to get into, especially if it's not something you're, I shouldn't say naturally good at, because I don't know if people are, I mean, there are people that are very good at roleplay, like just like off the bat, but but mm-hmm. there are definitely people that it takes a second for them to get used to it. And I feel like the buy-in and just like kind of going over it as a group and creating like some dynamics to start off with is a very good approachable way to do it, along with a fun, exciting adventure that is light, which I agree with. Keeping it light and fun is very important, because with it being heavy and dungeon crawly is very intimidating when you start to play a game. So keeping it light and humor, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I had something else, but I can't remember what it was.
I'm sorry.
No, that is totally okay.
I'm trying to think. Like, we've pretty much talked about most of the main points. I mean, is there anything else that you think has been super, super interesting, or something specific you would like to talk about with being a professional DM? Let me know, because I'd love to know from like your point of view, like what is something that that you think people overlook?
I think it's really easy to overlook the amount of work that goes into running games. People are surprised when I say I get paid to do it, but it's like, it's a job.
It is.
it's a lot of work, especially because I write all my own adventures as opposed to running pre-written adventures. Respect and love and care for your DMs, especially your home game DMs, because they're just doing it out of the love of their heart. And you gotta give them so much love.
Give them love, praise, and support, because it is a lot of work. As someone who has been running a homebrew D&D game, like for my first ever campaign, oh my god, it's a lot of work. It is essentially like a job. I fully agree. I wish I was getting paid for it.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun that it's like, it's payoff enough to play, but oh my god, it can get exhausting. And just give love to your DMs. They deserve it.
Give love to your DMs. Yeah.
Reminder.
And I love it. And I am so, I feel so, so lucky to be able to run these games and run games for money, to do it as a part of my job. I feel so blessed. Encourage giving as much support to your local DM as you can.
Absolutely. I agree. Running like D&D as a job, like any kind of, and you said something about this earlier, it is so cool to be able to do something creative and fun and like open like that for your job. Mm-hmm. It is so cool because it's so much freedom. And if you do love what you do, it does make it easier. It makes it fun. Like writing games and running games, those are fun. And like the whole thing is you're mm-hmm. getting paid to play a game, which is amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And it's such an incredible thing. People, you know, I feel so blessed to have had the players that I've had at my table. You know, one of my players, like my games were the first time they had gone out, like since the pandemic started, and just like being able to bring someone out of their shell and like communicate with other people. It was just like so, so heartwarming, so fulfilling.
So sweet. Oh my gosh. I miss in-person games so bad. I do love playing online, but there is a different vibe with playing in person. And I miss it.
Yeah.
You are...
It's incredible.
Yes, you are absolutely incredibly lucky. And I mean, I'm not even lucky. You put all the work into it and you've like gotten to this point on your own with starting these games. Like, you deserve it. And like, you're just like, go you. Like, honestly, like, it's amazing what you've been able to do, because it's hard to do stuff like that. It's hard. I mean, and even with starting just these games in person that can build up confidence for running games, you can. Have you ever thought of running something longer for a group of people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely have. And I would. It's just a matter of finding the right group.
I can totally agree with that. And I feel like if you're running something longer, it's even more important to put up those safety, put up the boundaries, and know the group before you play, because you can...
It's a long time.
It is. It's dedication. It's a long time. And I know of some people that have been trying, they're not paid games, but have been trying to get to play games on online more because they want to play more D&D. And they just, like, sometimes they just get yeeted into a game and it's like, okay, no, like, information about anything, just come in. Like, it's hard to get into a game with people that you don't know.
It is. And another thing that is strange and a weird thing to navigate as a professional DM is when people are friendly and they, you know, start building a friendship with you. Sometimes you have to, like, ask yourself, is this person just trying to be my friend so I will run their games for free?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I have had people like that, where it was like, after the first session, this guy was like, oh, like, if you have any spots in your home game, I would love to join. And I was like, that's really not what my home game is for. And I'd appreciate people liking my game so much, but it's a weird thing to navigate when all this, like, other social dynamic is being tied into it, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, there's expectations. It sadly almost makes it so that you have to kind of be separate from the group. You can't be friends with them as much. And that is sad,
yeah.
But it's putting up the boundaries of, you know, because lines can be blurred and people might think like, oh, maybe if we're all friends, it can just be for free. Absolutely. And that's where coming with the longer campaigns would definitely be tricky, because
mm-hmm.
you've got to be careful. And I give props to people who've run longer campaigns this way. And I really wonder how many people have successfully done it and, like, kind of stayed as a paid DM the entire way. It'd also be super interesting, because I haven't heard too much about, like, really finishing any, like, long-term games like that as a professional DM. So I might look into that, because that would be super interesting to know.
Yeah, and, like, the other thing that is unfortunate to consider, but that is, I think, real, is, you know, I am a, like, I am a person who people perceive as femme, as feminine, and I think that there is, like, this expectation of compassion that comes with that, because I know some professional DMs who are, like, cis men, who have had no trouble running long-term games because people respect them in a different way. And because it's such a male-dominated field, both in gameplay and in like the professional space of people who are running games, I think there's like a different expectation placed upon me as a DM, and like what I will allow to happen compared to someone else, where something like that would never be questioned.
Absolutely. And even like in those situations as well, there's people that would even be willing to try and push boundaries to see what they can get away with, which is very uncomfortable, especially if you're like wanting to play a long-term game.
Yeah.
Like I fully understand that. That is nerve-wracking. Like,
yeah,
and I can absolutely see that as a reason to stay away from running those kinds of games, but at the same time, it means that is then a more male dominated field, and that, you know, you can't really, not that you can't, but like, you got to be more careful when going out there and trying to do these things. And that's just very unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. Not to end on a sad note there. There is so much joy in the field, and I feel so, so lucky to be able to do this, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Even with the little bit of experience and stuff like that I have, I 100% agree. Like,
yeah.
Even though it is very male dominated and I am femme myself, I just like, it's scary. But, you know, just kind of do it. Like, as long as you...
You just gotta go for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Just kind of go for it. And as long as you keep yourself safe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's almost... I don't know if there's too much more to discuss from there then. But
mm-hmm.
This was absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed that a whole lot. And now I have so many like more questions to like kind of look up about online games and long-term games, but you've answered so many of my questions as well. And I'm very inspired and I'm just amazed and just like, good job. Like I'm just so proud and happy. And
thank you.
But yes, this was absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, and I would love to have you on more. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially with talking about some of your other projects and even some other games, because I so badly want to talk about some other games. So I would love to do some episodes with other games with you. That would be amazing.
That sounds great.
So I guess this is going to be the end of the recording. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the RPG Goblin. I really hope that you enjoyed it. Again, Odin's social media handle is in the description of this episode, along with all of the RPG Goblin social media handles as well. The next episode of the RPG Goblin will be releasing on Friday, February 3rd, and I cannot wait, as we are going to be talking about Electric Bastionland. So, see you next week. Huge thank you to all of the Patreon supporters and Kyle Addison for being our $20 patron who gets their name shouted out at the end. Thank you!